I'm Holly.
And I'm Haley.
Welcome to Mountain Mysteries, Tales from Appalachia. Everybody.
Hello.
Haley's drinking red wine.
Mm-hmm.
Straight out of the bottle.
Yeah.
She said, do you have any more of that Aldi red wine? And I said, yes, the kind I don't like. And she was like, yes. And I said, you know, I'm not going to drink it. So just go ahead and let's not dirty a glass.
She was going to bring it to me and I thought she'd bring me a glass. And she said, no, you can just have the bottle. I'm like, oh, sweet.
Yeah. So she's just chugging out of the bottle.
And I am. Periodically just tip that right on up.
That's going to be a good episode.
Winking Owl.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet Red.
That's the Aldi brand.
It's Winking the Aldi brand. Owl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How is it?
It's not great, but it'll do.
You said
I don't mind it. I mean, it's not like the best red wine I've had, but like it's fine.
I do not like it.
I purchase it from my local Aldi.
So, oh, wow. Yeah. How fancy.
If you don't know what Aldi is.
Or Aldi.
Listeners.
If you're from Europe, Aldi.
It is a...
German.
German, but it's not German food.
You can find some German food there,
but it's like the discount grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
They do have a lot of name brand stuff, but a lot of like off brand.
Yeah. Clancy.
You never really know what you're going to find. I mean, they have all your staple items.
Yeah. But you find like neat little things.
Yeah.
Their candles are amazing. I love their candles.
And it's like, it's just such a treat.
I have to be careful. I often just do the like Instacart. Mm-hmm. Aldi, because if I don't, I'll go in there. And the middle rows are always the, like, odds and ends things that you wouldn't think about, but you find and you're like, I need this in my life.
Yeah.
And I tend to do that and I overspend.
Mm. I am really been good recently about, like, I'll do, like, the outside because I need, like, and it's one of those things, you can find everything you're looking for. Like, they may only have one brand of it. Like, where you go to, like, other grocery stores and there's, like, 18 brands of canned beans. And it's like, what do I do? And this one, you only get one option of canned bean. So, choice is made. You just grab that one can and you're good to go.
So, it's Haley sitting in a room with a can of beans and red wine. Just chugging.
No, just crack the top off of the beans.
One on each side, yeah.
We
didn't let her have any beans tonight.
No, I do that with green beans sometimes. I'm right out of the can.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I drain
the water out, put a little salt in there.
I am obsessed with fresh cut green beans.
Love green beans.
I love those suckers.
Green beans, whole kernel corn.
Mm.
I'll also do that with
corn
straight
on the
out
cob.
The can.
I love corn on the cob. Oh, wow. You eat a lot of cans there.
Straight out the can.
A little worried about your salt intake.
Oh, and they have whole potatoes. Like the little like.
Yeah, I've never had those.
They're really good. Also in a can.
Hey,
sometimes I'll dump those out into a like glass container so I don't eat them out of the can at work because that just kind of freaks people out sometimes.
Yeah, it does. They're like, oh man, she's in poverty mode.
she's just lost it totally completely. Yeah. Which, I mean, it's May in education if you're not aware.
Please don't serve me that.
We're dying. We're on fire.
I work in mental health. We're always dying.
We're always on fire. Yeah. Usually in education, we get like maybe a week at the beginning of the year where everybody's figuring it out and that we're okay. This school year, nope. We hit the ground running with a bang.
Well, I mean, it's apropos for a podcaster.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's all right.
Just want to throw out, I am drinking something called Sweet Baby Java.
Ooh.
It is from the Dewclaw Brewing Company in Baltimore, Maryland, which is so odd. Usually I drink local.
I know.
But this is an espresso bean-infused chocolate peanut butter porter, and I'm going to tell you, I like it.
Was it from Aldi?
No, it was from the local grocery store, not Aldi.
Oh.
The expensive grocery store.
Expensive grocery store.
Kind of similar to the Publix. But yeah, I went there and decided, you know what? I'm going to invest.
Do it.
And I did. And you know what? I like it.
It's a good one.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's hard when we're from, you know, Western North Carolina to not drink local beer because there's so many breweries in Western North Carolina. And
on every corner.
Like everywhere.
I mean, I'm surrounded by breweries.
I mean, and it's like, there's a ton in like in Asheville, in the Asheville area, but like even like all the surrounding counties now there's tons.
So yeah, I mean, it almost feels like I'm a traitor or something. I know.
Sacrilegious right there. I mean.
Oh, well, Haley, would you like to hear a story?
Sure.
Okay.
How's your tooth?
Stop it. I don't know if you all remember, but in last episode, Haley threatened to take out my wisdom tooth with a pair of pliers.
Did not threaten. I offered.
To me, it felt like a threat. You said, go sit in your garage and I'll pull it out.
Oh, yeah.
I ain't doing that.
Okay. I'm
sitting next to the car while you pull out my...
We'll check in next week.
No. No, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so Haley, this story is the Trinity Murders, which I had never heard this story before.
Trinity as in like three or?
You'll see. Okay. You'll see where this is called Trinity. Okay. So today's story takes us to September of 1984. Mm. The number one song was Let's Go Crazy by Prince and the Revolution. Have you heard that one?
Yes, I have.
Oh no, let's go crazy. It's a great one.
I like Prince.
Me too. The number one show on television was Dynasty.
Ooh.
My parents watched a lot of Dynasty. Mm. Now, I personally like Dallas better than Dynasty.
I've never seen any of them.
I know you have no idea
what they are. But I know what they are, but I have never seen
Dynasty,
any of them.
Was all about this very rich family, and there was a lot of drama. People got slapped and pushed in pools. It was very dramatic. Anyway, on September 20th of that year, a car bomb exploded in a parking lot of a U.S. embassy annex in Beirut, where 23 people were killed. Mm. The perpetrators were an Islamic militant group known as Islamic Jihad Organization.
Dang.
Yes.
Wild.
So, that's what was going on in the U.S. That's what was going on internationally. Let's talk about what was going on in Louisville, Kentucky.
Nice.
Or
Louisville.
Louisville.
I'm about to say, who says Louisville? Louis. I don't. Why did you even say that?
I didn't even say it English. Louisville.
How did you say it?
Louisville.
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 Are we speaking the same language?
It's Louisville.
I've heard Louisville.
Louisville.
Oh my gosh.
Louisville.
Louisville. Louisville.
No.
Oh my god.
No.
All right. Well, all right. So we're in Louisville. Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Where best friends Richard Stevenson and Scott Nelson were attending high school together at Trinity High.
There we
That's
go.
Where we
That's
get
where
Trinity,
it is.
Right?
Were there three of them?
Two. Two boys.
Yeah, but like three schools. So it was Trinity.
No.
Okay.
No. I think it was just Trinity.
That's just what it was?
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm sorry to disappoint you.
It's fine.
All right. So the boys were both 17 years old and seniors. Richard was described by his teachers as hardworking, quiet, and introverted. Scott was described as happy-go-lucky, but also somewhat introverted and quiet. Mm-hmm. And so while in high school, they were both enrolled at the local tech school part-time.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so probably...
Dual enrollment there?
Right, so probably being able to graduate and already be ready to go into a job, you know, having those college credits.
Yeah.
So on the night of September 29th, which was a Saturday, the two friends decided to check out a football game. Their school, Trinity High, was playing against their rivals, DuPont Manuel High, at DuPont Stadium.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nothing like a good high school football rivalry.
Right? That's always fun. So Richard and Scott had never been to DuPont's campus and on their way got lost.
Oh.
They were relatively new drivers, and back in 84, there weren't GPS devices to help them, so I assume they probably didn't even have a map in their car.
I can't imagine.
Not having a GPS device?
Yeah. Like, I get lost. Like, I would have been a nightmare. I would have had to buy the Atlas. Just deal with it.
She probably would have had a globe in her car and really hoped that she could.
I mean, I have to put in directions sometimes still coming to Holly's house.
Are you kidding?
I haven't the last time I came out here, yes, because I went the wrong way.
Oh my Lord.
I missed my exit and I was like, I'm done.
Back in 95, we traveled to Minnesota to see my aunt. And we always used an atlas. I mean, that was our go-to. We kept it in the car. But again, you know, with atlases, often, at least in my experience of that generation, we had it for travel. Mm-hmm. And that's usually when we pulled it out, not local things. So I could see the boys not having it in their car because they weren't traveling.
Right. I remember having them in the car when I was little, like my parents using them. Mm-hmm. And then I remember when my mom, we would travel and like the new thing was she would print the MapQuest maps out.
Yes, I did that as a
And then team. We would put them in the, and I would be in charge of the MapQuest maps, and it was a lot.
Me too. And I had a hard time. It took me a while to let go of the printed out directions. Mm-hmm. But once you go GPS, you just don't go back.
Yeah, you don't go back.
Know? Yeah. So, fearing they would miss the game, they pulled over at a seafood restaurant called Moby Dick's.
Classic.
Isn't it? Moby Dick's was located on the corner of Logan and Oak Street in Louisville.
That was better.
Thank you. Moby Dick's is still in operation where you can dine in or take out.
But they serve some solid mountain fish.
Probably so.
I mean, you just really never know. What seafood place in the mountains.
What quality fish you can get in the mountains.
Yep. It's hit or miss. Right. It's touch and go sometimes.
Exactly. So Richard and Scott go into the restaurant and ask for directions. The decision to stop at this restaurant would unknowingly seal their fates.
Ah.
When the boys asked for directions, two patrons dining at the restaurant asserted that they knew exactly where the high school stadium was, and they would be more than happy to show them.
Okay.
They did ask, however, if the boys would be willing to give them a ride in exchange for their help.
No.
It's 84.
I know.
The boys happily agreed, relieved that they would be able to make it to the game.
Okay, but how did those guys get to the restaurant then?
I don't know. They were just at the, maybe they walked. They were at the restaurant and ordering, so they were up at the counter. And this is the type of restaurant, so just to set the tone and help you understand, this is the type of restaurant where you order at the front, so kind of almost fast food style, mm-hmm. and then they bring it to you, but it's not like a waiter or waitress waiting on you kind of thing. You know, so it can be a dine-in or a takeout scenario.
Okay.
And it was back then, too. So they were standing up there at the counter ordering, and the boys come in asking for directions. So the boys have said, oh my gosh, yes, this would be so great. If you show us where this is, sure, we'll give you a ride, no problem. But as the four were walking out of the restaurant and into the parking lot, the two men, later identified as Victor Taylor and his cousin George Wade, pulled a gun out and ushered the boys to their car.
Mm-hmm.
Two witnesses who had been in line behind Victor and George while ordering food saw the teens being forced into their blue Datsun at gunpoint. The witnesses got into their car and attempted to follow the boys' car, but lost them when they swiftly turned onto a side street. It was reported that one of the teens was driving with the other in the passenger seat and the two suspects in the back. Can you imagine how terrified they would be?
No.
I can't.
No, I do. I mean, not that this is the same thing, but I do the thing sometimes where I like get paranoid that there's somebody in my backseat, even though I like religiously check my backseat.
Yeah.
To make sure there's nobody there.
Always important to do.
Because I'm bad about locking my car. I'm going to be honest.
I always lock my car.
I'm not convinced it's locked right now.
Well, I live in a gated community. I think you'll be okay.
I think it's probably fine. Yeah. Randy will save me.
He will come and hunt them
I
down.
Can make it to Randy. I'll be fine.
he will save your life, no problem. Yes. He loves you. So, yeah, it's absolutely terrifying. Mm. So you don't really know what's going to happen, where they're going to take you. The boys were being directed by Victor and George as to where to drive. When they came to the 300 block of Ardella Court near Male High School, so this is another high school,
okay.
Victor directed them to stop the car, and the boys did what they were told. This is an area only a mile from DuPont High School, where they were
originally trying to get to
in the first place. And this area where they were was somewhat secluded and hidden.
Mm.
Victor and George told the boys that they merely wanted to rob them, and if they cooperated with everything they said, then the boys would be all right.
Okay.
Later, it was determined that Victor and George had far more sinister plans, and they told the boys this in order to gain their cooperation so the boys would not fight back.
Mm. I've always heard that thing, like...
Fight.
Yeah, well, like, never let them take you to a second location.
Yeah.
Like, whatever is happening, like, you are more likely to survive if you don't go to the second location. Like, if you have any, like, take your chances on
being... That's why I make Haley meet me here.
Mm-hmm. Like, take your chances on being shot or stabbed or whatever in the... Like, where you started, like, don't let them...
And fight like hell. Make sure, like, wherever you are, everybody hears you, sees you, make a commotion. Yeah.
And if for some awful reason you're not able to, you know, prevent being put in a vehicle or whatever, like, leave... pieces of, you know, like, bite the seat, leave your...
DNA.
Yeah. Pull some hair out or, you know,
anything,
spit, whatever. I mean, because at that point, it's, if you're not going to survive, you want to make sure that somebody knows.
That you were there.
Which is a terrible thing to have to think about.
It's horrible.
But especially for women, we think about it all the time.
Yes.
All the time.
Yeah.
Sucks.
So, things quickly changed. The boys were ordered to remove all of their clothing and hand over all of their possessions to the men. The boys did as they were told, slowly and fearfully removing each item of clothing and handing them all over along with all of their valuables. Okay, so this is the point where the crime turns from robbery to something else, and before I go there, I want to give a trigger warning that we're going to be talking about sexual assault, so please take care of yourselves. Jump past this part if you need to.
Can I?
No.
Okay.
Once the boys had removed all their clothing, Victor grabbed Scott, who was in the passenger seat, and placed him in the back with him. This is where he proceeded to sodomize him. Holding the gun on Richard, Victor demanded that he drive and drop off George, his cousin, on the side street. George claims later in testimony that he didn't want to have anything to do with harming the boys and asked to be dropped off on the sidewalk, basically.
Mm.
This would be the last time that George would see Richard and Scott alive. Victor demanded that they drive down the street and stop the car. Victor asked them to get out of the car and put the trigger to each of their temples.
Mm.
First, he shot Richard.
Mm.
And then he shot Scott. After the shooting, Victor walked the short distance to meet up with George. The two walked off into the night with their stolen treasures. Hours later, in the early morning of September 30th, a patrolman was doing his rounds as he drove past a blue Datsun hidden in the woods off the road. And this was pretty unusual, just to see an abandoned car on the side of the road like that. So he called in the tag to see if it was stolen and maybe someone ditched it.
Right.
Meanwhile, this is the most horrific part. We're adding to the horrificness. Right. Meanwhile, Scott's mom, she had a police scanner. And she overheard her son's license plate being read over the police scanner and called the sheriff's department to see why were they asking about her son's car.
Mm.
So, kind of back to the police at the scene, the dispatcher radioed back that the car had not been stolen at all. Feeling that something was wrong, the officer called for backup. And when another policeman arrived, the two searched the area. At 3:05 a.m., the police officers found the naked and bound bodies of two teenage boys, later identified by their families as Richard Stevenson and Scott Nelson.
God, can you imagine having to do the identification?
And I'll tell you who did that in just a few minutes, but my God.
Mm.
The amount of terror these boys went through in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah.
The police came to the Nelson home stating that two bodies had been found that might meet the description of Richard and Scott. Scott's mother provided the police with photos of the boys, and Scott's dad went to the morgue later that morning and identified both of them. No.
I would identify you.
Why am I dead?
I don't know. Just like, I mean, like, I could, I think I could make myself do it. Like, for your family.
Yeah.
Like, I could make myself do it. Yeah. But, like, for, like, my own family, like, I don't think I could do that.
I mean, probably for your family, I'd be willing to go in.
Yeah.
And I'd say.
Yeah, that's her.
Yep. That's her.
That's her.
It's all tatted up. That's her.
That's her. No.
But I just think how horrific that would be. And oftentimes it is family that goes and does that. And I just think, I don't know if I could live with that image.
I know.
You know?
And like, I wouldn't want a family to have to do that. Like if there's somebody else that's close, that's not, you know, immediate family.
So my aunt died in a really horrific car accident in 1984, ironically, about a month after this. And my grandfather, her dad, had to go and identify her along with my great uncle. And it's like just being stuck with that image. And from what I understand, it was very gruesome.
Yeah.
Your dad was actually on the scene.
He was.
Yeah. He was the EMS.
He was the paramedic on that scene.
Yeah. So, yeah, just horrific. And I can't think about how that would torture you and just be really difficult.
It's another weird way we're connected.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Right? Yeah.
Like we found this out like way later in...
Probably 2 years ago we found this out.
Yeah.
Which is just surreal. Super anyway.
Super crazy. Small world.
Totally. But anyway, so Richard's family had asked the people to remember him by donating to the Trinity High School Scholarship Fund. So really nice way to commemorate their son's life. At the scene, investigators were able to obtain both blood and hair samples. And again, it's 1984, so DNA is not a thing yet. In a crawl space... just a random crawl space they found, Scott's pants and a beige shirt, not belonging to either of the boys, was found several miles from the crime scene. Later, a witness who saw Victor forcing the boys into the car at Moby Dick's, the one who followed them, testified that he saw Victor wearing a beige shirt, which also connected it. Bullets were found at the scene and upon forensic testing were said to be from a .350 Magnum with a hollow semi-jacketed point bullet.
I'm going to sound really ignorant if I'm wrong, but I feel like that's like a big bullet, right?
Yeah. And like, very pointed.
Yeah.
Semi-jacketed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that causes a lot of damage.
Right. I mean, I think that you could probably kill a bear with that. Like, that seems... Well,
we're going to Google before people are like, oh my god, they don't know anything. You are correct. We know nothing. What is it called?
Don't give them that. A .350 Magnum with a hollow, semi-jacketed point bullet.
Hollow? Semi?
Oh, we say it so different.
Jacketed?
Point bullets.
Images. Okay, yeah. Big bullet. In my knowledge of bullets, it feels like a big bullet.
And it was pressed to their temple, the gun. So this tells you that the space between Victor, the alleged murderer, and the boys was not very far. So, I mean, really, they were shot at point blank range.
Right.
The likelihood of them surviving would have been...
Yeah.
So. Zero.
Yeah. Like, that was it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So as police went through the car, they also found the word fag, as it had been written on the steering wheel of the car. Again, protect yourself. I apologize for saying that word, but it was what was written.
Yeah.
So police wondered if this had been some kind of hate crime. They also found semen in Scott's anal cavity, proving that he had, in fact, been raped. Mm. And that's the thing that's interesting to me, that Scott was the one who was attacked. I don't know if it was just... I don't really know. Well, you know.
Yeah.
After the story of the crime was released to the media, along with a $12,000 reward for the arrest and conviction of the two men, many witnesses came forward, including the two restaurant patrons who saw the boys being forced into the car at gunpoint. Something to note here is that the two witnesses were well aware of the $12,000 reward, so just keep that in mind.
Okay.
The witnesses gave a good description of each man, which eventually led to the initial arrest of George Ward.
Okay.
And George, you know, was the one who had been dropped off
prior
to the killings.
Okay.
So George was taken into custody on October 3rd, 1984, 4 days after the crime, and was interrogated. Initially, George claimed he was innocent, he didn't know what they were talking about, but an hour later, he waived his rights to a lawyer and began talking to two detectives. He was interviewed for about 6 hours. He was even given a polygraph test, which he failed. Police interviewed him, but George denied being involved with the murders. He said he was dropped off down the road and consistently said this. This was pretty hard for police to believe because it made sense. It made no sense to them, mm-hmm. I should say, that he would be dropped off and then they would drive back and commit the crime.
Yeah.
Like this, it just, it's a weird sense.
Yeah, it's a weird chain of events there.
Exactly. George did agree to be part of a lineup, and one of the witnesses who saw him at the restaurant came to the jail to identify. Mm. And George was, in fact, identified in the lineup and changed his initial statement, saying that, okay, yes, he was with Victor, but he didn't kill the boys.
Okay.
He signed a statement and gave it to police, and he also gave the last known addresses where Victor had been living at his mother's house and his sister's house, so off and on at two different residences.
Gotcha.
While they couldn't initially find Victor, they did have his cousin Eugene in custody for the rape and sodomy of Eugene's girlfriend. So it seems to be a family.
This is a family thing.
That's weird. Yeah. Eugene said that he saw Victor and George driving the car with the boys in the back. He also stated that he saw Victor with a Trinity High School duffel bag and jeans with orange stitching that did not belong to Victor.
Mm.
He also saw a watch, a ring, a Led Zeppelin cassette, and firecrackers.
Okay.
None of which belonged to Victor.
Right.
All of which can be trailed back to the boys.
Yeah.
Eugene also claimed that Victor asked his sister if she had heard anything on the news about two white boys being shot.
Hey.
And this was hours after the crime.
Mm.
He also claims that George and Victor split $100 between them and that Victor traded his sister a gun for cash.
Hmm.
Yeah. Charges against Eugene were dropped. But later he testified at George and Victor's trial. Okay. And he was subsequently arrested and did a year in prison for other crimes.
Yeah,
but,
feels right.
Yeah,
sounds right.
It should be more.
Mm-hmm.
At Victor's family's home, they found a cassette and a radio Reader's Digest that belonged to one of the boys.
Hmm.
They also found a silver clip with beads and feathers that was on the window visor of the car. They discovered a beige pair of shoes that belonged to Scott. Victor gave Richard's school jacket to his girlfriend as a gift.
Oh. Gross.
Isn't that disgusting?
I know. Small.
Ugh. So, the trials were set to start, but they worried that in the county they were having them, that it wouldn't be a fair trial. So they actually moved it to Fayette County in early 1986.
Okay.
And George was given life in prison for his role.
Okay.
So easy peasy, yeah, done.
He's done. Yeah. Get out of here.
Even though he said, I wasn't a part of it.
Whatever, you were
still
there.
Convicted. Yep. Exactly. Victor wanted a change of venue because he was worried since George got a life sentence that the jury in the county would, quote unquote, take it out on him and give him the death penalty.
You don't say.
Take it out on him. I mean, come on,
give him
dude.
What he deserves.
Exactly. Victor's trial lasted, get this, 13 weeks.
Dang.
That is a very long trial.
Yeah.
And afterwards, he was convicted of 2 counts of first-degree murder, robbery, kidnapping, and 1 count of first-degree sodomy.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently, he was sentenced to death, absolutely, on May 23rd, 1986. So right around 2 years after the crime,
yeah.
Almost 2 years. Several years later, George discovered that he wouldn't be given parole. I don't know why.
How did he not know?
I don't know either.
Probably.
Clearly not. Like. So he suddenly changed his statement saying, oh, no. I don't know what you're talking about. Victor's not even involved. We're not even involved with this case.
What?
You're kidding, right? This case gets really convoluted. So
sounds like it.
Victor used this as a means to try and get a new trial. Saying, I mean, you know, he's recanting now,
yeah.
And I've always proclaimed my innocence, so you need to give me a new trial because I need to get out. Well, fortunately, the court denied this, thank
That's
God.
Good.
And obviously, no DNA testing could be performed on the sperm that was found in Scott's body because there wasn't enough of it. And right. Back then, all they had was like blood testing.
Yeah.
And obviously, his underwear had been lost. DNA evidence, anything that had been preserved, was lost.
Right.
So there was nothing to test. So that's really frustrating. So in 2008, after Victor appealed again for another trial, he was denied with the assistant Commonwealth attorney at the time stating, the Commonwealth, and this is a quote, the Commonwealth is confident that we got the right person. We got a valid conviction. And there would be no more because part of Victor was kept saying, well, you know, you don't have any DNA to prove that it was me. You don't have anything necessarily.
Right.
Everything is circumstantial. You know, it's 2 witnesses who said that we're the guys. How do you know this? But several of the things that back it up would be.
Right. And then you found things that belonged to them that were gone that night. In your possession.
And but some of theirs is like, well, I got that off of a guy or I stole, you know.
Whatever.
We got it from somebody. Exactly. Well, then who did you get it from?
Right.
You know? Oh, you suddenly don't know some random guy? Exactly.
Some random dude just handed you this stuff.
Yeah, and said, oh, here you go. And and it's things like, these would be more trophy items, you know?
They're not valuable things.
No, like a duffel bag? Who the hell cares about a duffel bag?
A Led Zeppelin cassette?
I mean, unless you're a huge fan, which I couldn't imagine they would be. Like,
no,
why?
Not a valuable item.
Exactly. So all of that fell flat.
Yeah.
Currently, George is serving his life sentence at the LaGrange, Kentucky State Reformatory.
Mm.
And this is a maximum security facility.
Good deal.
Victor is on death row, awaiting execution at the Kentucky State Penitentiary in Edneyville, Kentucky. You all can help me out with that.
I don't know that one.
Yeah. Victor has continued his appeals.
I'm sure he has.
At what point are you just going to be like, come on?
I know. It's like, when do you, like, take accountability for your actions?
Apparently for him, never.
Never.
But fortunately, all of his appeals have been unsuccessful, and his conviction has always been upheld.
Yeah.
He last went to the appeals court in 2021, so
Jeez.
2 years ago, where, again, he was denied.
Good.
So, Attorney General Cameron stated, and this is a quote, 37 years ago, families, friends, and the entire Louisville community sustained a deep loss when 2 Trinity High School students were brutally murdered. While the Sixth Circuit ruling does not lessen the pain for the victim's family, we hope that they have found solace in knowing that Taylor's conviction was upheld. Our office is committed to seeing that justice is done and the sentence imposed by the judge on the recommendation of Kentucky jurors is carried out. And I am grateful to Assistant Attorney General Matthew Kriegel and Solicitor General Trad Meredith for their work in this case, end quote. So there's no date of execution yet for Victor.
Right.
But fun fact, Haley, I looked this piece up. The last person executed in Kentucky was a man by the name of Marco Allen Chapman, and that was in November of 2008.
Dang.
So it's been almost 15 years since anyone was put to death in Kentucky.
Yeah, that's a big deal when they actually do it. I mean,
yeah,
most people die on death row, but like most people aren't executed.
Exactly.
Like they will.
Most people die on death row. You don't say.
But like they will die of natural causes.
Exactly, and that's at this point Victor is 72 years old.
Yeah.
And he has served nearly 40 years in prison for this crime. So there is a very high likelihood that he's just going to die in prison before he will ever be, lethally injected.
Yeah.
And a weird factoid is that in 2020, there was a film about men on death row. Victor was in it.
Oh.
Yeah. So I can't imagine, again, being like Richard and Scott's families, hearing or even seeing any kind of publicity in this way for this man, because anything that he said is either probably a lie or very one-sided and doesn't give,
I mean, like, I love a true crime documentary as much as the next person. And, like, I can even get behind, like, interviewing people who are on death row that are, like, talking about their crime, but, like, taking accountability for it. Maybe repenting a little bit, like that kind of thing.
Finding Jesus. Like finding,
talking about that, like taking accountability, understanding, like, and accepting that, like, yes, this is just. Like, I am where I am because of what I did.
Yep.
And talking about it in that way. But, like, I don't love the idea of giving publicity to someone who's going to continue to say, like, oh, I'm innocent or,
Mm-hmm.
Like, no.
Exactly. I mean, he deserves to be where he is.
And, like, and there are probably tons of people that are, wrongfully convicted. I mean, we see it.
Oh, absolutely.
Time and time again. So I'm not saying, like, I don't want to hear that. But, like, in a case like this, where, like, yeah, you did it.
Yeah.
Like, you did it.
Exactly. I mean, how many ways can we prove that you were there?
Right. Yeah.
Your own cousin said you were there.
Yeah, like, you were there.
Yeah.
You were there. Like, you've pretty much said, like, I was there, but you can't prove it.
Yeah.
So, but clearly we did, so.
Sucks
for you.
So, yeah, I mean, this is a case that is nearly 40 years old. I'm just glad that they found these men who had committed these horrific crimes.
Yeah.
And for what? For what?
I know.
A duffel bag and some cassettes? I mean, this is bull. And $100?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to kill two innocent kids? And they were kids.
Yeah.
They had their whole lives ahead of them. And that's what makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
Well, these are the Trinity murders. You're welcome. I'm sorry.
I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't that.
The Father, Son, and Holy Spirit?
Maybe.
That's the Trinity.
That's what I
think
wanted.
I need another sweet baby Java.
I keep drinking my wine out of the bottle over here.
She was, nursing that wine. Yeah. Like, I need it in these moments of hardship.
Yeah.
I understand. But yeah, it's weird because in finding stories, things just sort of come our way and come to us, and I don't know why, but this one just sort of
appeared,
and I was like, oh, I've got to follow this trail, and kind of intense.
So it's a lot.
It is a lot. So. Well, Haley, why don't you let them know how to get a hold of us?
Well, you can do that in a variety of ways. One of those is you can send us an email at mountainmysteries.appalachian@gmail.com. You can find us on our Facebook page, Mountain Mysteries Tales from Appalachia. Find us on our Instagram, mountainmysteries.appalachia. Or check out our Patreon for some extra fun things. Patreon.com/mountainmysteries.
Extra fun things. It'll be amazing. You will like it.
It's great. You will enjoy
it. I will speak
it.
To you in this monotone voice, and you will enjoy it. Definitely. Please join us. It is fun. love Haley. Beep, boop, bop. Powering down.
Please. Give him a bottle of wine.
She's going to have some more wine. All right. So I'm going to give a shout out to Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville.
Cheers.
Cheers. There we are. All right, y'all. Well, we will see you next week for more fun. Haley's still swinging. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.